Hi you, and welcome to the Mission Driven Entrepreneur Show. I'm your host, Stephanie Smulders, and in this show, we will have a combination of solo episodes from me personally with my tips, my advice as an online business and marketing coach, and I interview the most exciting mission-driven entrepreneurs and ask them all their secrets and all their tips, and we dive into their personal life as an entrepreneur as well. I cannot wait to show you and to let you listen in on all these conversations. So let's dive right in. Welcome to today's episode of the Mission Driven Entrepreneur Show. And I'm so excited to welcome Imogen to the show. She is someone I look up to and I'm always excited when I get to talk with her. I even take notes when she's talking. She is a strategy coach who helps entrepreneurial women to be more prolific, productive, and present in their life and business. She helps women use unconditional and unconventional methods and tools to break free from the mainstream male-dominated narratives about business to create success on their own terms. Welcome. I'm so excited that you're here.
Hello, Stephanie. I'm so glad to be here.
We always start the podcast with one question, and that is, what is your big mission?
That's a big question. My big mission in the world is to help people to see all the possibilities that are available to them to create a beautiful life, beautiful success on their own terms. And it starts with helping people to unlock their imagination and access all the tools that they already have inside of them, rather than looking to the external world to get the answers.
How did you get there? I love your story of how you got there.
It's interesting. I have a friend staying with me at the moment, and we were talking about this last night. And the truth is this started when I was a kid. It's really interesting. I recently went through my Saturn return. I turned 30 this year. And your Saturn return is an astrological event that provokes you to reflect on the first 30 years of your life, or the first 29 years of your life, in order to kind of evaluate and work out what you want to keep with you and what you want to leave behind for the next phase. And this year I was thrown into this moment, and I became very reflective, very nostalgic, and was sorting through all of my experiences and different memories. And something that really came to light was that I realized that I've never felt more myself now. The last time I probably felt this way was when I was about 7 or 8 years old. So I really feel I've done this journey where I was me, then the world conditioned me to become who they thought I should be, what sort of behaviors I should exhibit, how I should act in the world, how I should speak, the kinds of careers I should go after, how I should look. And I feel like I've come back to myself. So it's really been a process of unlearning more than becoming. And I would say the big challenge that I've faced in the last few years has been specifically about reminding myself that I have a body, and coming back into, you know, reminding myself that I have a mind, but my mind is an assistant to my body. My mind is there to be a tool to help my body make decisions, help my body make choices. It is not the driver of my life. And so a lot of the work that I do now is specifically about helping women to create a business, create a life that really works for them, that is aligned with their personal values, their personal goals, but most of all about coming back into their body and actually using everything that they have available to them and not letting their minds take over.
Yeah, so beautiful. What was the catalyst for you to switch from having a career to becoming an entrepreneur?
It's really difficult to pinpoint a certain catalyst. I had this sense that there was something better. I could be doing better. I could be feeling better. I could be using my gifts better. I could be leading a more interesting life. And I let myself entertain that possibility. And then actually what pushed me to make the decision was various health issues that were showing up in my life because of chronic stress. So I ended up having not one, but two herniated disc surgeries in my back, despite having never had a serious accident. It was really a medical mystery. I had a lot of back pain, a lot of stress issues, a lot of headaches, and was just really tired all the time. And I think it was really my body that really, having been ignored for so long, became a lot more confident and desperate, I suppose, to make it understood that I was not living the way I was designed, that I was living out of alignment, and that things would just get worse. So I guess there was this push and this pull. The pull was, I just had this niggling sense that there was something else out there for me. I didn't know what it was, but I knew that there was a possibility, and that my body at the same time was going, this isn't working, this isn't working, this isn't working, do something about it. And so when I was 27, I left my full-time marketing job. It was a very good job. It was a well-paid job. I worked with great people. And I set off on my own with no plan, with no real idea of what I was doing, no clients, but just being so open to discover and open to explore. And, you know, just under 3 years ago, I was a freelance social media strategist. And now I'm a coach, you know, helping women to design their dream business using tools like human design and tarot cards. I mean, it just shows you that in the space of such a short window of time, so much can change. And I have never felt so fulfilled in my work and so in love with my life as I do now.
Yeah, and always booking out.
Yes, yeah. Always booking out with ease. Yeah. Since I began, actually, you know, I've been fortunate to never have a problem of not having any work. And I just see so much opportunity and possibility around me. There's always an unmet need. There's always something that I can help with. There's always something that I want to learn that I've never gotten stuck in a place where I'm not doing something that I love. So, you know, again, this is the thing, you know, I help a lot of women transition from employee, you know, from being an employee to entrepreneurship. And there's, you know, a lot of fear, a lot of it about, you know, what if I never work again? What if I don't get any clients? And so often what we think will be the biggest problems don't show up for us. Of course, there's other challenges that we never expected. You know, I had a client earlier this spring who left a very successful job as an agency strategist, went freelance just as the pandemic was hitting, and signed 7 clients back to back during a lockdown, during a pandemic when the whole advertising industry kind of went on pause. You know, there was no budgets. And yet there she was, signing clients, you know, working nonstop, loving it. And I just thought, here we have a beautiful example of how the narrative, the kind of mainstream narrative, or the assumptions that we have about how things are going to go are irrelevant, because, you know, just because it happened to someone else doesn't mean that it has anything to do with you. So, you know, everyone's experience is completely unique. And that's why I love this journey, because all of my clients, they are just always doing things their own way. And it doesn't matter what the world tells them they can and can't do, or who they should and shouldn't be, because they're constantly proving everyone wrong.
Yeah, it's so magical, right? If you get to work with people who have that kind of sense about them, that they just, it happens, it works, it is for their design. And what I want to ask you as well is, you come from a mainstream workplace, and you help a lot of women who are still there but who want to transition. So what do you see that is labeled a mainstream business workplace culture, and how do you want to change that by changing people's lives?
Well, I think a really big one is this myth that we have to be pushing and hustling and working all of the time to have any, you know, any measure of success. And I think it's just not true. You know, we've been, if we really take a step back and look at like this on a macro level, it's kind of adorable. It's kind of adorably dumb what we've done as humans. So we've invented all these ingenious machines to help take the workload off us, to help make our lives better so that, you know, we have to labor less. And these machines have sped everything up. But what we've done is we've not let them take the load and us take a step back and stay human. What we've ended up doing is mimicking the machines, trying to keep up with them. And we've completely forgotten why we invented them in the first place. And what's happened is now we have this incredibly inefficient system. I mean, so you're on a big, you know, on a really macro level, you end up with things like it takes 3 liters of water to make 1 liter of bottled water in a plastic bottle. And then on an individual level, you know, people end up having to take so many hours of rest or having to numb themselves just to survive 1 hour of like unnecessarily stressful work. You know, like people have, you know, just to do 1 or 2 hours of like intense labor, the amount of recovery that's needed is so enormous that it's just so imbalanced. We'll never have enough leisure time to actually recover from how we work. And so really what I want to help, I think the first step when someone's moving from an employee to having their own business is to unlearn everything they were ever taught by people who don't run a business, and to really be conscious of not bringing in every bad habit and everything that, you know, it means to be a successful employee in the eyes of your boss, constant presenteeism, late, you know, who's the latest in the office, who's always looking busy, because that's not what moves the needle when you run your own business. And to really, you know, see these as two different things, like what it means to be a quote unquote successful employee or a good employee versus what it means to actually see success in business. And is the first thing is decoupling from this idea that being busy is being successful. From what I see and what I know, the most successful people I have seen seem to have an awful lot of free time, seem to so radically underschedule themselves because their success comes from never missing the magic that life is about to present them. And I've really tried to emulate that, where I really try and do as little as possible so that if something great comes my way, I have the capacity to give it my full attention. And I'm not so busy with my head down, hustling away, that I actually miss opportunities for collaboration, opportunities where I don't need to do anything to benefit from, opportunities to witness something magical, opportunities to be inspired. So yeah, I'd say the big thing is if you're going to let go of being an employee and become a business owner, there's this whole process of deconditioning that has to happen. And it's hard. That's why I do this work.
Yeah, it's also very much your human design profile as a projector to not hustle and to trust and to rest and to spread this message that you don't have to always look busy and be busy in order to be successful. And how has human design changed you or your business? And I would love to hear that. All projectors here, I'm a projector, so I would love to hear how that looks like for you.
Well, you're absolutely right. But at the same time, I think that often what I see in human design is that we have a sort of shame around our strengths and our gifts, and we end up overcompensating. So for instance, no one feels as much guilt and shame and panic around the idea of a niche as manifesting generators who don't need one. And no one overworks themselves and burns out and hustles quite as much as projectors, exactly the people who are not here to work. And so I think for me, it's been a process of understand, you know, it's been hard to come to terms with the fact that I'm a projector and I'm not here to work, because My entire identity, my whole life has been about working hard. And so when I first discovered human design, that really hit me like a ton of bricks. It really took me months to come to terms with what that meant, because I saw it almost as an attack, like the universe was laughing at me. And so I think we're all, you know, no matter what our design is or our profile is or our authority is, we're all on this journey actually to coming to terms with ourselves, because often we are living out of our design because of this inherent shame we have about owning that part of us. I agree. Well, I think when we can live into our design as projectors, the beautiful gift we have to offer the world for other projectors, but also for all other types, is to model what, you know, the fact that, oh, there's another way of doing this. You don't have to work that hard. Use your imagination, like, you know, set up systems that are efficient, you know, enjoy being a human, you know, be a full-time human as opposed to being a full-time employee or a full-time business owner, you know, like live this full life. And generators are here to show us all that actually when we live into our joy, when we do what lights us up, when we avoid and delegate and pass on what isn't ours to do, we have a much more fulfilling life. And manifesting generators are here to show us all that you don't have to stick with something if you don't want to do it anymore. And that actually the most creative and fulfilling opportunities come when you blend a whole load of stuff together and make something brand new. And manifestors are here to show us that you just do things your own way. And, you know, reminding people that your way is the right way always, you know, and not to make yourself small. So, you know, we all have a gift that we need to first develop in ourselves and use for us first and foremost. And then through using that for us, we inspire others. You know, what I love about human design is that it completely removes this need or this drive that we have as humans to fix each other, to try and change each other. And I think especially for projectors, we can fall into this trap where just because we can see everyone, we feel it's our responsibility to reach in and sort of tell people, oh, you should be doing this, and why are you doing that this way, and so on. And actually, no, the beauty of the human design system and the human design experiment is that when everyone is able to use their own design just for themselves, it automatically makes the collective better. Nobody needs to go and fix anyone or heal anyone. They just need to live into their design. And then there is balance in the ecosystem. There's balance in the ecosystem. And so this is why I just love this system so much.
Yeah. I felt like you were speaking directly to me, as like I used to really have this savior complex that I always wanted to make sure that other people were being lifted up and that I would help them. And actually today, right before this, I had a conversation with someone because I just went to the doctor for something minor, and I rarely go because I'm super healthy. And this person always goes to the doctor here in Malaysia. So I asked him for recommendations. And I told him, oh, I'm not going to take half of what she's going to subscribe me because I don't take antibiotics. I rarely use any kinds of creams or whatever. And he was like so in shock that I live that way. And I was like, I can help you. So I messaged him, I'm not going to help you unless you ask me a specific question and you invite me in to help you. Because before, I would send him a whole list of like, what I'm vegetarian, I do this, I do that, la, la, la. I can all help you to stay healthy. And I was like, nope. If he's not asking me and he wants to go to the doctor every single week for something, that's his thing. That's not my thing. I'm not going to save him. I felt like you were talking to me.
No, and we've all been there. That's, you know, you're telling the story of my life. And, you know, this is where the projector bitterness comes from, because the advice, when we're reaching in with something that's not needed, that's not wanted, and is, you know, is a projection, that's where this bitterness comes from, because it's not valued. And, you know, the wait for the invitation strategy, I think it seems kind of intangible and quite difficult to follow. But I think when you actually unpack it and realize what it means, you know, it doesn't mean you have to wait for an invitation to eat, or you have to wait for an invitation to, you know, start a blog. It's basically, if you are about to share your gifts or your knowledge with someone, do they want to hear it? Have they asked for it specifically from you? Or have they demonstrated that you are the person that they want to hear from right now in this moment? And if not, then don't do it, you know, save yourself, save your precious projector energy. You know, and also because I think we also, it's this mindset of scarcity. It's this mindset of, I have the opportunities for me to shine are so few, I have to grab them wherever I can. And it's not true. You know, it doesn't work like that. Save your knowledge and save your gifts for the moments when you are going to be called on and you're going to need every ounce of energy that you got, because they want you. And, you know, the more you fritter it away with people who don't want to hear it, the less passion, the less energy you have for the moments that matter. I think that's really the projector genius, is this idea of like living a rich and juicy but incredibly efficient life. It's like, only, you know, having this flawless sense of inner timing that you move or stop or wait without hesitation, because you always know when it's the right time to do something. And I think that's what I've learned in my journey of deconditioning from toxic productivity, really becoming more like remembering who I am and trying to, you know, to integrate what I've learned through human design and living into my design, is I have actually started to develop this sense of inner timing that, you know, when I choose to move or not, or speak or not, sometimes it doesn't make sense to other people. Why are you suddenly moving halfway across the country? You know, why are you not sharing? Why are you not going to publish your book that you wrote? Why? Because I know it's not the right time, or it's the right time. And it's just, I know. It doesn't matter what anyone says. It's, and I'm always right. I'm always right. And it's, you know, learning to trust that. And I don't believe this is just a projector thing. I think every person, man, woman, child of any type, we're all encoded with this potential for this inner sense of right timing, this inner sense of knowing. And, you know, this is a fundamentally, you know, you ask me what my mission is, and maybe this is it. It's helping people tune into that sense of self-trust and inner timing of, we don't need a blueprint. We don't need a strategy. We don't need to, you know, take 1,000 courses or ask 100 people for what we should do, because we just know in ourselves what's right for us in any given moment.
Yeah. I love it. What a good circle that we've come on with these questions. But you're also someone that I always take advice on when it comes to productivity and trusting that whatever you feel like it, you'll do it. Could you give some tips on energy management or on productivity for women or those kind of topics? Because I know a lot of people ask me and I'm like, you have to go to her. She knows everything.
Right. So I say that the big problem with mainstream productivity is that it focuses on time management. And actually, I say that we should focus on energy management. Why? Well, we are all cyclical energy beings, all of us, men and women. And it's kind of rare for us to think of ourselves as energy beings. We might think of ourselves as flesh and bone beings or mental beings. You know, so many of us, our defining experience of our life is being in our minds. And our bodies are often this thing that sort of, we don't notice until something goes wrong, but we're energy beings. You know, actually how we interact with the world is through energy. And we, you know, with mainstream productivity, we tend to have this very discipline and punish approach. So we plan our time and we, you know, choose how we're going to show up at work by thinking of, you know, effort and reward. I'm going to work and I'm going to put in an effort. And then if I do everything I set out to do, I'll reward myself with something. I'll reward myself with a break, or I'll reward myself with watching TV. And if we remind ourselves that actually we're energy beings, so therefore, you know, we need energy in order to expend energy, you understand the flaw in this model, because it's like trying to drive a car a long distance where you haven't filled up the gas. You know, it's like, right, I'm going to get in my car, it's already on empty, and I'm going to try and drive 100 miles. And then when I'm basically completely like just driving in neutral and no gas, then I'm going to try and fill up with fuel, you know, when I'm already in a desperate situation, as opposed to, no, duh, you fill up your car first and then you take a journey. But we do this all the time with our bodies, where we're already on empty, we're already starting from a tired place. We're trying to push ourselves, being like, well, then I'll reward myself at the end. And inevitably what happens is you're running on empty, so you can't achieve all the things you want to do. And then you never reward yourself because you have a big stick you're beating yourself with, going, I'm rubbish. I procrastinate. What's wrong with me? I can't do it. I'm so lazy because I didn't get my to-do list done. So what I recommend is the first principle of moving from time management to energy management is understanding that there's an input and output energy balancing. So if you want to do anything, the first thing you need to do is actually fuel yourself. What's going to give you energy? Now, of course, you know, there's the ones that we all understand, like sleep, food, water, but there's lots of other things too. You know, for a lot of people, you know, exercise expands their energy, or, you know, reading a book or getting inspired expands their energy. Taking a walk outside expands their energy. All these things that we often use to reward ourselves after the fact are actually the fuel we need to get going. So for me in my life, one of the big shifts was when I was an employee, I'd be in the office at 9. I would be kind of rushing to work. I'd be kind of tired and foggy in the morning. I'd arrive in the office. It would take me forever to get going with my work. I'd stay in the office till like 6 or 7 p.m., get home, be so tired, have no time to do any of the things that I wanted, like work out or, you know, have a hobby. And then I would just begin the cycle again, being tired in the morning. And now how I work is my morning is my energy fuel time. So, you know, I do whatever I need to do to get myself ready for the day, which means, you know, maybe walk, maybe working out, maybe meditating, maybe having a really slow romantic breakfast with my husband on a weekday, maybe reading a book, listening to a podcast. And then I maybe start the day at 11 a.m. or sometimes even later, because I fueled myself. And now I can go the whole day knowing that I have the energy and I'm not waiting till the end of the day to do the things that recharge me and restore me. With energy management as well, it's especially for women, is understanding that there, you know, there are three hormonal cycles that affect us as humans. There's the circadian rhythm, which a lot of us know about. It's the kind of 24-hour hormonal cycle that governs our sleeping and waking hours, our appetite, and so on. And this is the cycle that governs men for their whole lives. And this is also why mainstream culture, workplace culture, business culture is all set around the circadian rhythm. But for women, you know, when in their reproductive years, they have a different cycle that governs their life. It's called the infradian rhythm. And this is a 28 to 30 day cycle. So in this affects your brain, your energy levels, your motivation, your metabolism, everything really. And so with the infradian rhythm taking over, that means that you are consistent, but on a monthly cycle rather than a daily one. So you're not going to be the same every day like a man might necessarily be. You're going to be different from week to week. And it completely, you know, understanding that, we need to completely reevaluate what we consider a productive day, because a productive day in the first week of a woman's infradian rhythm is going to be very different to a productive day in the last week. And so, you know, really understanding how our body is working, and, you know, this first is input and output model, and also how the energy is going to be changing through the month is absolutely key.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you tackle this, because you're so good at understanding productivity and having certain systems that help you understand yourself so that you can be productive your own way. because productivity for me is different than being productive for you. Well, it's kind of, I think it's going to be very similar still for us, but maybe for other people. I also need my morning to fuel myself. And I tend to start my day at 10 or 11 as well. And I used to beat myself up that I couldn't be the employee, but also not the business owner that woke up at 7 a.m., started work at 8, and then worked all day and had this like hustle mentality. I could do that for 2 or 3 days. I could crash that same week just because I was pushing myself to be someone that I wasn't designed to be. And I love that that is something that you are sharing and that you want to share on the podcast. And how can people learn more about their own rhythms?
So I would say, so the three rhythms then that are really important are the circadian, the infradian, and there's also the ultradian, which is a small one. It's basically an 80 to 90 minute cycle followed by a 20 minute rest period during waking hours, and then it reverses in sleep. So in sleep, your brain is resting for 80 to 90 minutes, and then it has 20 minutes of activity. That's when we have the REM sleep. And so, you know, you've got these three hormonal cycles that are governing your life. In addition to those, because like, just as you said, everyone's experience is so different. This is why, you know, I'm so against blueprints and, you know, one size fits all approaches, because it's just, there is no universal human experience, you know, in the deep nuance, you know, where things actually move the needle, you know, things are different. You know, some people, you know, they don't really, you know, either on hormonal birth control or they're not menstruating, they're not going to feel the full effects of the infradian rhythm. Maybe the circadian rhythm is going to be the one that they feel the most. Maybe the lunar cycle really affects them. Maybe they feel deeply affected energetically by, you know, the power of the full moon, the waxing, the waning, and the new moon. And, you know, I say to people, experiment. You know, track your energy for a month, 2 months, and see where you are. See if there's any patterns that show up, you know. And, you know, if you really want to take this seriously, I also advocate for a short period is avoiding any stimulants. So no caffeine, no alcohol, and really sort of, you know, no alarm clocks, if you can, to see actually when are you naturally tired and when are you waking up in the morning? You know, try and work out what is your natural waking and sleeping rhythm? Because like you said, you know, some people, they are early birds. They naturally do wake up at 5 or 6 or 7 and they have a lot of energy in the mornings, or they like the morning to start the morning in a calmer space. Other people, they're, you know, night owls. They might wake up really late, but have most of their productive energy in the evening or into the night. It's really hard for people who fall outside the kind of norm to arrange their lives in this way. And I'm actually interested to see now with so many of us working from home, not having to commute to work, whether anyone is experiencing any increased flexibility in, you know, how they can kind of link their work day to their natural rhythms. So yeah, I would say the first step is really, you know, tracking yourself, you know, before going and looking into any kind of, you know, reading any books or looking at any studies or so on, is actually to ground yourself in your own experience. You know, do an experiment, see how you feel. It doesn't have to be complicated. It could simply be at the end of every day, write down 3 words that summarize your energy for that day. And then over time, you know, see, is there a change? You know, are the same words popping up all the time, or are they slightly changing? Or what is it that changes your experience of energy? You know, say, oh, I felt really good today. What did I do in the morning? What did I do last night? You know, who was I with? What environment was I in? You know, start looking for the clues that, you know, suggest, you know, what was I eating? And this is where we start to understand as well how this input-output energy balancing model might work for us, because we need to know what is it that fuels us. And again, it's going to be different for every person. Some people feel they can't actually be productive without eating a big meal, you know, for breakfast. And some people don't eat any breakfast at all. And actually, if they eat too much, they get all foggy and they can't do anything meaningful. So again, it's, you know, everyone is so different. It starts with getting into your body and tracking, how am I experiencing my energy for me?
I want to ask a harder question.
Yeah.
Around, because you talked about understanding your own rhythm, your own energy, and being either an early bird or a night owl. Do you believe that this could also be conditioned, or that you tell yourself that story, like, I can only be a night owl? How is that?
Well, I guess if you're thinking of it from a human design perspective, there are certainly clues in our human design system for how we are likely to experience energy. And also, you know, for instance, when I'm working with a client, I love to point out the environment tone, you know, the arrows. You know, are you a person designed to be dynamic in your environment? Are you designed to be more receptive? Because all of these things give us clues to how we are, you know, when we're following our design, we're so less likely to be conditioned, and we're more likely to feel ourselves and therefore reach this kind of state of perfect energy balancing. I don't really know about, you know, whether one is naturally born an early bird or a night owl, and whether we can change. Maybe a different, you know, again, especially for women, you know, like when we're children, it's the circadian rhythm that governs our lives. In our reproductive years, it's the infradian rhythm. And then after menopause, it goes back to the circadian rhythm. So for women, we really have these three different phases of life where our energy is going to feel very different. We're going to have different kinds of superpowers. And so, you know, over your life, you might change. You know, I can so imagine that someone who was an early bird as a child becomes more of a kind of late riser as an adult, and then returns to a place where maybe they're different again. And again, this is why the tracking is important, and to keep checking in with yourself, and, you know, to say, oh, I'm changing, and not seeing as something that is wrong with you, but that your body has different needs at this time, and that you're going to have to change how you show up for yourself. You know, for instance, I had a burnout in November 2018. Which hit me really hard and kind of took me by surprise, because, you know, this was before I discovered human design, before I knew I was a projector. And I thought that I was here to work. I thought that I was unstoppable when it came to how much effort I could put into working. And it all, you know, it all caught up with me. You know, I'd heard about burnout, and I truly believed that it was something that only happened if you were really in like a toxic work environment where you were really under the thumb, you were being bullied, you know, you were really being exploited. But I was doing what I loved. I was a brand strategist working freelance with startups. I felt on top of the world. I love my clients. I love my work. And then I burned out, and I ended up, you know, having to give up my biggest client because I couldn't fulfill the contract anymore. And I lost 80% of my income, and I actually had to start everything over again. And so I decided that this wasn't my first rodeo. This wasn't the first time I'd like run myself into the ground from overworking. And I decided, you know, I'd already had these two stress-related surgeries. And so I decided, okay, I think this is the nail in the coffin. I think this demonstrates that I can't keep going as I've always done. This strategy is not working anymore. And so I committed to an entire year of basically doing the reverse of everything I'd ever thought I had to do to be successful. So instead of, you know, effort versus reward model, I'll work and then I'll see if I have time to do a yoga class or meditate. I flipped it. You know, I'm going to put in all my hobbies, all my passions, all my workouts into my calendar as appointments, and then I'm going to work around them. And, you know, I'm going to increase my prices so that I only have to work half the time. And I basically committed this entire year to this experiment where I had a very rigid schedule. Actually, I planned all my time out in advance. I had really daily habits, journaling habit, working out habit. And it was such an empowering year, and I saw amazing results. And then at the end of the year, I actually realized, because I was getting so in tune with my own body, that I didn't need this level of rigidity in my life. and that I could just trust myself to give myself what I need without having to commit to a daily habit. So for instance, I used to work out every day, and now I work out when I feel my body is calling me to work out, and I feel great. And I don't meditate every day, but I meditate when my body is calling me to come home to myself and check in. And I journal whenever I feel called to do so, which tends to be once or twice a week. So I actually, through this process of being very regimented about my self-care, what actually happened was I internalized this body wisdom to the point where I don't need a system anymore to take care of myself. And I think that was an unexpected discovery, was that you don't actually need a lot of tools and strategies and systems and, you know, checking in on yourself and all these things to manage your life. When you get to that point where you trust yourself, you have this inner sense of knowing, this inner sense of timing, it's effortless. It's effortless. And this is where, and I don't believe this is just me. This is where I want everyone to get to. You look at an animal, it doesn't have a planner to tell it where to go, when to eat, when to sleep. They just know. And we are animals. And so I believe that we can get back to this, where we just know when to eat, when to rest, what to eat, where to go, when to stop, when to run, when to work out, when not to, when to work, when to get inspired, when to see people, when to retreat. There's no reason why we can't. It's just training ourselves to get to that point where we don't need any more training. We don't need to learn anything else. And maybe that's the scariest thing of all, that actually, what really, like, you know, when we talk about a life of learning or lifelong learning, it's actually a lifelong unlearning.
Mm-hmm.
It's a returning process. And that's kind of the journey I'm on right now, is how far can I take this? How much more can I trust myself? And what does that look like in my life? Where I actually I just stop disciplining myself or just letting go of what I should be doing and just follow what my body wants to do in any moment. And it's feeling really interesting.
Yeah, you were so on fire. Like, now I want to experiment with this more. And it's definitely that trusting yourself as an entrepreneur as well. Like, if you don't trust in yourself, how are you going to trust in your offers? And then how are other people going to trust in you? It all starts there. And I love that you picked that out as well. So that's super important. And
right. And, yeah, you know, we're both marketers.
Yeah.
And I think this is the marketing strategy that no one talks about. You know, you don't need tons of budget for ads or a complicated funnel or 1,000 courses to learn the latest trends. If you are so trusting in yourself and in what you're offering, you're so passionate about it, you believe in it so much that when you, whatever you share about it, whether it's 3 lines of an Instagram post or a video or a blog post, it is so captivating that it does all the work for you.
Yeah.
And I think that's just it. Again, right, you know, like projector magic is reminding ourselves first of how easy and how little actual work needs to go into something for it to be a success. And, you know, how sometimes the solution is so stupidly simple that it's so obvious that it's invisible. You know, every time I think about when I have chosen to invest in something or in someone, it's so often because I just saw them so believing in what they're doing. They maybe are imperfect, a little sloppy, mincing their words, spelling things wrong. You know, their branding is a little bit cheesy, but they just so believe in what they're doing and trusting in themselves. And so, you know, unworried about how many people sign up or, you know, what people say, that it's so magnetic. You just think, I just want to be around this person because they're just living the full expression of their design. And I want to be around people like that. And I think, you know, so many people who are trying to market themselves, you know, don't get bogged down in the tech and the, first work out, like, what do I really want to share? What do I want to create? What makes me excited? You know, if you focus on what makes you excited, inevitably it makes others excited. And I've experienced that for myself where, you know, I've experimented on my own life, you know, seen results, shared them with people, you know, like, folks, I did this crazy experiment and, you know, my life didn't crumble. All this cool stuff happened. I'm going to tell you about it. And, you know, that's basically how I became a coach, actually, is I didn't decide to be a coach. It just got to the point where so many people were asking me to coach them and refusing to take no for an answer that one day I realized, okay, maybe I should actually become a coach and say yes to these people. That's how it happened. I was just talking about the things I cared about. I was just, you know, sharing what interested me, and people were asking to give me money for it. And so I don't believe it has to be complicated. I don't believe, you know, going back to what we talked about initially, I think one of the biggest myths that we're sold around how to be successful is that you have to be, that everything has to be hard. And it's not true. It's not true.
Yeah, so much good stuff there. I'm going to re-listen to this episode just for myself, because I tend to sometimes get caught up in, oh, I have to have funnels and my emails need to be optimized and everything needs to look perfect. But I sell the best when I really, truly 100% believe in it and just share if it comes up in that moment, rather than having it a whole funnel and a whole launch. It is nice that I know all that stuff and that I can set it up and that it's then passive, but it doesn't really make that much of a difference.
Well, it's the system that amplifies the natural authority that you have. So, you know, it's step two to amplify that self-trust and that pure message that you're sharing. But, you know, what we're told in marketing is that it's the wrong way around. It's like, set up your funnel and everything and, you know, then see if people show up, or, you know, then see, look at the market and see what everyone else is doing. See if you can create something, you know, it's so externalized, you know, we're entering a new world, you know, where there's limitless possibility. You know, what I love so much about the concept of Facebook ads is that never before in human history has it been possible to create something, type in a few keywords, and basically reach exactly the people that your thing is supposed to serve, no matter where they are in the world. It is pure magic. It is absolutely magic. And so we need to remember this, that like the rules that used to govern our lives, or what was possible or what was realistic, are no longer apply. And one of the things I think it's really difficult to live in this strange limbo period where so much of our experience as humans is changing. I mean, fundamentally what it means to be human is changing, is that we're still using old ways of thinking and applying them to our reality, and that's really out of sync. And so, you know, exactly as you said, it doesn't have to be complicated. If you can just reach a small group of people all over the world who've just been precisely waiting for what you have to say, you know, you don't need to spend years building up a shop front and building up authority and, you know, building a brand to get customers and to start growing a profitable business. You know, it excites me. And I guess, you know, what I try and imbue in my clients is the sense of limitless possibility and excitement that, you know, oh, there's another way I can do this. Oh, I never thought about that before. Oh, that sounds really fun. Oh, that would be really easy for me. Yeah, can I really do it that way? Yes, yes, you can. Nothing lights me up more than, you know, hearing from, you know, I tend to work with one-on-one clients. I tend to work, you know, intensively over 12 or 13 weeks. And then after 3 months, we have a check-in where I find out what they're doing. And nothing lights me up more than just watching them just make these moves in their own unique way, and just, you know, following their intuition, using the strategies that we created for them to amplify that intuition, and just seeing them out there, just like living these beautiful, full lives and seeing results and growing businesses and just having fun. That's what I want for everyone in the world, is playing with life. It doesn't have to be so serious.
That's a really beautiful way to end this podcast, because we can talk for hours. We sometimes do. But I want to wrap up with the last question is, what does it mean for you to be a mission-driven entrepreneur?
Well, I think for me, mission-driven means, firstly, seeing your business or your enterprise not just as a tool to extract profit, because I think that's the old way of doing business, but to extract profit whilst building collective wealth, and not just financial wealth, but, you know, educational wealth, opportunity wealth, relationship wealth, experience wealth, you know, creating something that is this thriving, healthy ecosystem that, you know, is a net benefit to the world, to the planet, to the community. And I think the other half of it is, for me, a mission is just like your compass. It's your North Star. It doesn't have to be big and lofty. It doesn't have to be profound. It's just something that you have chosen to focus on, to help guide you in the hardest moments and to help you make decisions about what's important. So, you know, for me, mission driven means having personal values and living into them and using them to help you do hard things. And for me, those words are vision, courage, and friendship. You know, vision for me is really having a big picture view of not just where I'm going, but how my actions impact the wider world, and making sure that I'm choosing to do things in a way that, you know, isn't just, you know, benefiting me by exploiting someone else. Courage is really about really trying to live into this value of pushing myself or doing things that feel personally hard or put me at personal psychological risk in order to share a message or to do something that I know benefits the collective. And friendship for me is all about relationship. It's that, you know, I love to think of business or an enterprise as a big tree where, you know, of course we all want the fruit, right? But the process of creating the fruit is enormous. You know, to create the fruit, you first have to have really rich, fertile soil. And for me, the rich, fertile soil is all the things you don't see that go into making a successful business. It's the privilege you have. It's the people that have helped you. It's your teachers. It's the experiences you've had. It's those relationships. Everything that creates this really healthy microbiome. Then you have your shoot. You know, it's about, you know, trusting in yourself to like bring this idea to life, to nurture it, to give it the fuel that it needs to, like, you know, we talked about, you know, holistic productivity, you know, fueling yourself, like giving yourself a fighting chance of actually being able to do this thing. And at the same time, the root system is going down, you know, that strong foundation, you know, trusting in myself, like recognizing that there are seasons and that actually the best way for me to my business to survive is to build this strong root system, this foundation. Again, it's all invisible. No one can see it, but it's there. And then finally, the last part of the process is the fruit. But if you try to just grow the fruit on its own, you try and, you know, go to a tree and like force it to grow a fruit really fast, you're going to end up exhausted and frustrated. But if you just take care of the soil and watering it and being patient and, you know, making sure you pull out the weeds and so on, you'll get your fruit and it'll be fairly straightforward. You know, like in, you know, organic agriculture, they say, you know, don't grow crops, grow soil, because you can't grow crops without healthy soil. And the same with business, you can't grow a business without a healthy ecosystem. And for me, friendship means building that ecosystem of support, building that ecosystem of relationships. I want every client of mine to be a friend. I want everyone to feel like I'm their friend, that I'm there, I've got their back, and that people have my back, and that, you know, we have this wide base of support like a tree that is, you know, helping us to thrive. I think one of your questions was, you know, what's made the biggest impact in your life and business? And for me, it's people. It's the relationships. It's my teachers. It's my clients who, you know, took a chance on me and invited me to be a coach for them. That's it. That's the secret to my success, is if I take care of my relationships, if I take care of my friendships, the rest of it takes care of itself. So yeah, for me, mission is so linked to, you know, what is it, you know, where are you going and why? What are your values and how can you live into them?
Wow, so beautiful. And I love that the tree picture that I have in my mind now. And I want everyone to go and reach out to you, but where can they best connect with you?
So the best place to go is my website. It's www.imogenroy.com. You can also find me on Instagram. I look forward to connecting with you on social media.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here and really going deep and sharing it all. I'm so excited.
Thank you so much, Steph. It's been a real, real delight, as always, talking with you.
You have reached the end of another episode of the Mission Driven Entrepreneur Show. If you've got any insights from listening to this episode, it would mean so much to me if you shared them on Instagram and tag me at stephanie.smolders, or you can leave a review. Your help and support means truly a lot to me. You can find all the links and resources mentioned in this episode in the show notes below, and be sure to visit stephaniesmolders.com to discover the fantastic bonus content. Thank you so much for listening, and I will speak to you very soon.